terrible speed hallucinations that I had to lean against the wall. It was too horrible to understand all at once. That dirty, evil, thieving little bastard. That treacherous, rotten little sot. I was stunned by the flat-out criminal insanity of it. Jesus, I thought, we don't get many moments like this in life. It was an original experience. Incredible. No wonder I had a feeling all along that I'd heard or maybe seen Andrew's proud gibberish somewhere before. It was mine. I had written it, word for one of my long-ago Examiner columns that I thought got killed at the last moment before it went to press and out on the syndicate wire. Well, shit happens. Once a thing gets loose on the wire, it can turn up almost anywhere, even in the hands of some filthy little pervert like Andrew, who had his own warped reasons for plagiarizing it all by himself in the jail library at night. But he was clearly sick and dangerous. He was a liar and a thief and a rapist who was probably incurable. Some states, they have castration programs for foul balls like this. My brain felt crazy, but my body was stone rigid. I felt like I'd just been shot in the nuts from behind and went into shock, or at least a state of pain, but I hung on and stared straight back at his dirty, poisonous, treacherous, ugly little eyes. They were small and roomy with drink and cheap speed, or maybe crack and PCP. God only knows. You can get anything you want in prison these days. And he was in truth a dope fiend and a shameless, thieving whore with a bad Whiskey Jones and the morals of a slut on acid. Fuck you, Andrew, I said to myself. You're doomed. You're a rotten, lying degenerate. If there was any real justice in this world, you'll stay in a filthy backwater prison for the rest of your goddamn life, and the rats will gnaw through your skull. I stared at him, but he was grinning like a newborn sheep. His mind was somewhere else, lost and gone, like some kind of pod with no pulse. He was ugly and wrong, deeply wrong, and now I knew what had to be done. The truthless little swine had left me no choice. He was evil. Not bad, Andrew, I said finally. Not bad at all. Who wrote that stuff? Me, he said cheerfully. I wrote it. I shrugged and stood up, and then I snorted the rest of the crank and took him by the arm. Let's go, Andrew, I said. It's time to go to court. He followed me out of the library and down to the street. It was still raining. When we got back to the Jeep, I gave him a chamois to bite on while I seared the hardened steel strap off his leg with electric bolt cutters, then sent him back out on the street and told him to hurl the whole beeping evil contraption through the only window in the library that was still lit up, the executive men's room, where we'd spent most of this hideous night. Seconds later, I heard the crash, and then he came loping out of the darkness with a waterhead grin on his face. Good work, Andrew, I said. That was a very shrewd move. Now they'll think you're still somewhere in the library. They'll be looking for you all day. He giggled and slapped his thighs. Fuck those pigs, he said. Their brains are pitiful. They'll never look for me in a court, will they? I smiled but said nothing. There was no need for it. The die was cast. The fat was in the fire. This giddy little rapist was about to have his day in court. It was early, and we still had an hour to kill, so I drove around for a while and listened to Bob Dylan songs while I took the big Lambo through Cherokee Park at speeds that caused Andrew to lose his grip again. He wept and jabbered and cursed me as I aimed the huge tank of a Jeep down narrow roads full of S-curves at 100 miles an hour without ever touching the brakes. Then I drove downtown on River Road and hit what looked like the entrance to the old Jefferson Bridge at 114 or 15. But the bridge had changed somehow, or maybe demolished, and we almost went into the river. When we finally got jammed in a maze of bent steel and old wooden girders, I looked down and saw that we were just over the spot where my old friend Muhammad Ali had stood when he came back to Louisville after winning the 1960 Olympics and threw his gold medal in the Ohio River just after accepting the key to the city from the mayor. My friend Harvey Sloan, for Yale and Puerto Rico, who still denies it ever happened. All history is gossip, said Claire Booth Luce. Judge Marshall has made his decision, said Andrew Jackson. Now let him enforce it. Right, and so much for all that. I backed off the bridge and drove slowly over to Courthouse Square where the lawyers were gathering for breakfast. My own people were not there yet, so we ordered some poached eggs and fat back, and then I grabbed a well-dressed lawyer out of the parking lot and shook him down for some speed, which I snorted at once in a doorway just across from the old county jail. Andrew was useless, but I ignored him. It was almost 9, and the business was picking up at the metal detector gates leading into the courtroom. Let's go, I said. It's time. On the way to the security checkpoint, I handed him a baggie full of crank and a steel knife and knuckles tool that I knew would be seized at security. Here, I said, take these things and I'll meet you inside. I have to go through the press gate, where the cops do a full body search on everybody. Yeah, so you take your stuff and go through the visitor's gate. They don't search anybody down there. Just stroll right through, and my lawyers will be there to meet you with all the right papers. Hot damn, he said. We'll bust these pigs wide open. I can hardly wait to get up there on the stand and tell the real story about what they did to me. Don't worry, Andrew, I said. There's damn little justice in this world, but you're about to get your share of it. Yeah, he muttered. It's about goddamn time. I nodded. He was still about 88% drunk, and he was still wearing his blue Jeff County jail coveralls. Crank had worn off a long time ago. Now he was getting sloppy. There was a stupid kind of white trash arrogance in his manner, and his eyes were like two little holes poked in his skull with a cheap screwdriver. I was beginning to hate the sight of Andrew. He was dumb and ugly and loud, a bonehead rapist with a big mouth and a mean spirit. So I busted him. It was easy. As we approached the courtroom, I could see my old friend Rodman, the bailiff, was in charge of security at the press media gate. Wonderful, I thought. We're about to witness an outburst of brainless violence. Rodman once played fullback for Male High when they won the state championship 3 years in a row. But in recent years, he'd fallen on hard times, and now he worked mornings for the court and sold drugs to lawyers in the alleys around Courthouse Square at night. He was a huge brute with no sense of humor, no morals at all. He appeared to be asleep as I checked myself through the metal detector and whacked him on the side of the head with a rolled newspaper. Wake up, Rodman, I said. Your time has finally come. Oh, God, he moaned. What now? Good news, I said. You're about to make a huge arrest. Is your gun loaded? You bet, he said. I'm hungry to kill somebody. I need money. Never mind money. You'll be a hero and get promoted or killed. There will be shooting. Oh, Jesus, he hissed. What's happening? Big news, I said. A vicious armed rapist just escaped from the county jail. He's trying to get into your courthouse to blow the judge's head off. God almighty, he said. Where is the bastard? Right over there, I whispered, pointing to Andrew as he stood nervously in line at the spectator's gate, where a crippled teenage bailiff called Missy was aggressively searching everyone who came through the gate, unaware that she was about to confront an armed, psychotic rapist with nothing to lose. Rodman took one look at the situation and leapt in action. He drew his gun and raced across the hall like a fullback and hit Andrew from behind just as the stupid little pervert slithered into the gate and set off every bomb detector siren in the courthouse. Andrew never had a chance. Rodman got him in a death grip, full Nelson, while the teenage bailiff kicked him repeatedly in the groin till he finally sank to his knees and screamed desperately for help as Rodman pistol-whipped him from behind, then dragged him to his feet as I got there and hooked Andrew twice in the groin before he even saw who I was. So I hit him again before Rodman could put him into manacles. Other courthouse bystanders joined in, stomping and whooping as they swarmed over him. It was like a rubber chicken, kicking and jerking and screaming as I moved closer and closer to the beating area, tried to catch his eye, but it was impossible. They were swollen shut, and I had a feeling he didn't want to talk to me anyway, if only because he was bitter. On my way out of the courthouse, I stopped by a cell and had to push my way through the crowd so I could speak with him personally. You'll have plenty of time to write your stuff now, I said quietly. You'll be in jail for the rest of your life. He stared through the bars at me, but his eyes were like split grapes, and his shoulders were so slumped that they almost touched in the shadows under his chin. He was ruined. He was finished. He was doomed. I wanted to kill him, and I knew I could, but it would be wrong. Indeed, I was tired of murder and tired of scums like him. How many times can a zombie rapist like Andrew be allowed to work his foul will with impunity before we know he has to be murdered? But not by me. I was weary. I was lonely. And I was weak in a different way this time. I'd lost my tolerance, especially for poison lizards like Andrew. On my way out, I paused long enough to give him a quick beating on both sides of his ugly, truthless head. And then I left with no noise and walked back to the hotel in the rain. It was midnight, and I was running late on my deadline for the column, which I finally composed on a voice writer in a frenzy of hate, disillusion, and fear.